I'll form the head. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the BAMF podcast. This is Mike Lafferty, and today we are, we've been doing one-armed biceps curls for about a week because we're planning on pimping Stark City really hard. So if you're not listening to promotional podcasts, I will turn off now. So I've got a round table of the guys who worked on Stark City. Adrian Smith, who is one of our artists and our layout guy, and he did a lot of the writing, actually, for the history of Stark City. Adrian came up with a description of the cross-dimensional invasion, now that I think about it. So,
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was Adrian. So, Adrian, welcome to the podcast.
I did a bit of that, yeah.
Well, that explains why it's so English.
Exactly. Hey! Yeah.
I had no idea. See, I thought Steve did all that. I thought Steve Perrin did all that.
Steve did like 99% of the history, but that one segment was Adrian.
Oh, well, that's cool. Well, I like that bit a lot. So, thanks, Abe.
No problem.
And I was going to get Steve, but it wasn't... Steve's a busy guy, and he has a cell phone, so it's hard to get him during the day. But I definitely appreciate Steve's contribution. He was a big heavy lifter. And speaking of heavy lifters, there's Mr. Jason Tondro.
Oh, hi. It was actually a thrill to work with anything that has Steve Perrin's name on it. So it was really humbling to be invited, and I had a great experience working on this, and it was a lot of fun to do.
Oh, and Mr. Joe Bardalis is here as well, one of our writers.
Yeah, hey, everybody. How are you?
Joe, you did the Gear Town, is that right?
No, I did. The Catacombs.
Catacombs. Yeah.
The Gear Town was on me.
Gear Town. Yes.
Yeah.
That was John. That was Mike.
That was
Yeah, and if you want a kind of the prototype Gear Town experience, check out the Gangbusters module for icons, which Mike consulted with me on quite a bit.
And I believe that was, wasn't Chris McGrory involved in that too?
Yeah. Yep, okay, sure was. Yeah, and then it was basically us sitting around talking, and I think that's where Mike had an idea, and I was like, well, let's file off all the names and just give that area kind of a feel, and once that was out, I was like, well, we should do something else, Mike. Let's do something completely based on this, so that's kind of where it all started.
Yeah.
Where Stark City started?
Yeah, Stark City started with Mike and I talking about what icons could use is not necessarily like a freedom city or, in fact, a whole city setting, but what could use is rules to create your own city setting and an example of that.
Yeah.
Or an MMO-style place where all of your heroes and villains can come and have, like, a bunch of villains for them ready to fight, but your heroes are the center stage, not the bunch of heroes you see all in the book and everything.
Yeah, that was kind of what we aimed for. And that's Dan's kind of came out of a conversation we had, and then Steve Kenson agreed to do some setting rules for us. And in my defense, I was drinking very heavily at the time, so that might just
and then decision. And he totally made up, and he totally made the right decision in going, well, Dan, I'll manage it. You just can do some art, and I'll round up people. I'm like, that sounds great. And then I look away, and I look back. Oh, my God, you guys built a skyscraper. Okay, that's cool. Way to go, Mike. So, 99% of the lifting was done by Mike. I'm, as I've told Mike in the past, I'm an idea man. I come up with ideas, and then I help implement them as best I can, but I'm not very good with, like, gathering all the parts together and mixing the concrete.
That's a nice way of Dan saying he Tom Sawyered me.
Yeah, basically. This is so fun. Won't it be great? Look, I did pass out pamphlets at Gen Con.
Hey, I appreciate that. It was a nail binder.
And I still drink out of the Stark City shot glass I had left at my house.
Nice. I still drink wine out of the Icons coffee mug you used to sell.
Nice.
There's a Stark City shot glass?
Yeah, there's. I have one extra.
I have a fainting goat shot glass. I didn't get a Stark City shot glass.
Seriously?
I drink out of my fainting. I've done shots from my fainting goat one. So.
Yep. I shots from my Stark City shot glass whenever a new thing comes out.
Maybe we should sell those Stark City shot glasses. Maybe there's a
they're really neat. They're really neat.
Yeah.
For drinking related RPG accessories.
Hey. Yeah.
What we should, you know, what we should do is we should get a logo for one of the bars in the setting.
There you go.
And then the characters could all have a shot glass while they roleplay.
Fitz Price could have a shot glass. That would be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Well, you know, those things, it's not hard to make those up, like on a Cafe Press or something, and just put up a storefront. We could do that.
Yep. Yeah, totally.
So, okay, well, hey, let's talk about, as we said, this was kind of Dan's dream child, and I sort of got shanghaied into it. And
yes, he became the midwife / nanny / au pair / fifth grade teacher, all the way through college, basically, so awesome.
I love
how much of Jerry Springer raising of a child that wasn't his own.
there's so many backhanded compliments in that last 2 minutes. I don't even know where to start.
Mike is like a really good woman. He's the turnout carrying.
Yeah, but anytime Mike had questions, he could come to me, and anytime he needed me to, like, twist arms or just say anything, I would, and or promote, and I'm a promotion machine, so I love doing it, jumping on and telling people, hey, seriously, check out Stark City. And, I mean, the Kickstarter went off without a hitch, and everything got squared away. I couldn't have asked for a better helper with this idea. If anyone is looking to hire a consultant / manager for your project, don't do it because his wife will kill you. But he's grown. Like in 18 years, ask him again. Maybe he'll do it again.
Well, thanks, Dan. Just I'll yep. go with all the backhanded compliments and direct compliments too.
We're all impressed. They are all direct. Mike did a fantastic job. It was just amazing.
So, well, hey, we should probably talk about something more sensitive besides this being a mutual admiration society here.
Yes.
Let's see. Who wants to talk about their part of Stark City and kind of Jason, you did the Silver District. You want to weigh in on that a little bit?
Yeah. So so I got asked to do the downtown area. And it seems to me that when I sort of came to it, I thought, well, the downtown basically has to be like the essential nature of the city, except cranked up to 11. You know, it has to be. It doesn't have. It's not like the dark and gritty section or the high tech section or the financials. It's all of that stuff, kind of all compressed. And I sort of went into it with the idea that if someone was only going to have one of the neighborhoods for the project, this would be the one they would have to have because it has the superhero has a team headquarters in it for one thing. That where all the player characters are supposed to be based, and because you know the downtown is sort of the heart of the city, so I spent a lot of time brainstorming at first, and then once I really got working on it, I fleshed out the superhero headquarters.
I guess we should mention that that's the conceit is that the player characters will be the Sentinels, who are like
that's right.
the
that's
JLA
right.
of Stark City or the Avengers.
Yeah, the idea is that there haven't been any superheroes in the city for a long time, like a decade or two. But there's been a recently elected mayor. And the mayor has decided to basically play off of the celebrity factor of superheroes. So he's invited superheroes to come back to the city so that he can have lots of pictures taken of shaking hands with them. And this will help his re-election campaign. So the mayor is like your best friend in the city. And you get this old building, which used to be the home of the Sentinel. Now, the Sentinel is a legacy hero in Stark City. He's been through multiple generations, the Phantom, the old classic comic strip character, who's had every generation, you know, there's a new Phantom. Well, in our setting, every generation there was a new Sentinel, except that in the 80s, the last guy to have the Sentinel name basically turned into a supervillain. And he murdered a vigilante in the city and ripped the top 70 floors off of his home headquarters and left town. And so the player characters are invited back into that building. So they have the best headquarters that a sociopathic mastermind can build. And that became the lead part of the city. And then I put in some bad guys and some other stuff, and I tried to play off of the silver idea, so there's some werewolves in there, and there's a lot of Judas Iscariot-style betrayal, and there's a lot of other kind of stuff all going in there that played off of silver and Silver Age. And then the last thing, but when it finally all came together for me at the end, was when I had to figure out what happened to all of the old superheroes. Now that I know that Adrian is to blame for the extraterrestrial invasion, did you come up with the idea that all the superheroes had basically vanished at the end of that invasion?
No. I kind of just wrote some of the history of the actual Gloriana, the actual universe of Gloriana. Idea of the invasion was already there, laid down already. So.
Okay, so Steve Parra decided that it was at the end of this invasion from an alternate Earth dominated by the Empress Gloriana, who is a kind of fusion of a Queen Victoria and Imperial Japan, which I thought was just brilliant, by the way. So at the end of this invasion, all of the heroes vanished, mysteriously. And so I decided, well, Mike probably doesn't want me to explain this, but I'm going to anyway. He can cut it if he doesn't like it. So I came up with this idea. I'm not going to spoil it on the podcast, but I came up with the idea of what had happened to all of the heroes and where are they, and as a way for the player characters to possibly interact with them.
And you know what? That's, go ahead and spoil it, Jason. That's fine.
No, I don't want to.
Okay.
I want to make you buy it. I'm totally mercenary. But I also don't want to ruin it, because people that are listening to the podcast may want to play without knowing. So it's better if only the GM knows sort of what happened to all the player characters, all the old superheroes. So I wrote that up, and I put it in. Of course, Mike asked me to write 10,000 words, and I wrote 20, because that's what I do. And he had to decide if he was going to keep it or cut it. And I was fine with him cutting it. He graciously decided to do it anyway, to put it on. And so that was what I got to do, and it was really enormous fun, and I was very proud of it by the time I was done with it. And I got some great art from it, too, by the way. Dan came really came through with me on American Fist.
Oh, yeah. That was a great one. Just bored on the subway was one of my favorite things. I had two concepts. One was like him, like the Tick, sitting on top of a train car. But I thought it would be better if he was just like in the train.
Yeah.
As I said, around the graffiti and all the nonsense.
One of the most fun part of this for me was taking all of these throwaway character concepts that Steve Perrin had invented that were superheroes from Stark City in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And taking them and blowing them up into full-blown character concepts that could tie into player characters or that you might meet. And so he had a couple of these where a guy named American Fist, who was sort of a right-wing Republican hero of the Reagan era, who I decided was basically a combination of Captain America and Iron Fist. So he was trained by monks in Vietnam to master his inner chi. And he was in this sort of long-term personal conflict with a liberal left-wing hippie superhero whose name escapes me. I think American Freedom. I can't remember.
I drew a picture of them fighting.
That's right. You did.
Yeah.
And so it was really fun to describe these little tiny bits. And Adrian did his bit about the Gloriana invasion. So I riffed on, well, okay, if you have this world where one of the major powers is an England-Japan alliance, what might one of the other powers in that country be? So I decided, well, they've got to be Franco-Egyptians. So I had this, Egyptian pharaoh who's also descended from Napoleon. And it was just a lot of fun, just get really kooky and wild with it. Anyways, that's what I got to do.
Oh, cool. Now, Joe, tell us a little. You were on the Catacombs. Could you describe that for our listeners and talk a little about the writing process on that?
Yeah, sure. When you first approached me about it, you mentioned you wanted to have this whole underground area, literally, in the sewers and down in the subways. And, the first place your mind usually goes is to Marvel and the whole mutants in the subway thing.
Oh, yeah.
But we were talking, I was talking with Mike, and, that's so overdone with. Everybody does that. Mm-hmm. And Mike mentioned this comic, Incognito, Bad Influences, and that's by Ed Brubaker. The art was Sean Phillips, and the colors, I think, was Val Staples. And they had this underground area where basically the criminals had literally created a literal criminal underground in this old section of the city that was underground. So we kind of went with that, and since our city, Stark City, sort of had a little bit of a Chicago feel to it, we had all the whole history of, the 1920s, the Prohibition era, and the gangsters. We decided to add all that kind of influence into it, too. So I took a look at some underground areas, the hidden bootleg tunnels in Chicago, stuff out west in Portland, I believe it's underground after the earthquake. There's a whole section of the city buried underneath the streets. We kind of came up with that idea to kind of create this whole interconnected web between the different underground venues and passageways. And the influence there, we put in a strong mafia influence in there because of just the nature of Stark City and being like Chicago. So what you find down there is you've got this whole community of supervillains and mafia types and mad scientists and There's even a black market in the middle of this thing where they sell all kinds of crazy things and have all kinds of goods and services for supervillains. And it's away from the watchful eye of the law. And it's, you know, it's very well protected by the powers that be down there. The big kingpin, unofficial mayor, would be Dominic Marinelli, who's sort of a former. He used to be one of the big bosses in the mafia back in the 80s up on the top of the city. But the current mayor, our current mayor at now in Stark City, had put him away for good. But he managed to escape and go underground into a safe house down below in the catacombs. You know, and I try to, you know, try to find all kinds of different ways, other types of connections. We touch on the sewers and how they interlink. You know, there's a lot of old, you know, catacombs and things beneath graveyards and the churches and things like that. They all interconnect and weave. And, you know, it's sort of like you kind of got to, when you're down there, you kind of have to know what you're doing to get around there and have the, you know, like know the layout yourself, because it's pretty convoluted. So, but I think it's kind of fun because it's you know, there's I did put one character in there who's sort of a information informant, and he sort of lives on his own in the middle of the old abandoned subway system. Stark City was going to have an underground subway system.
Yes.
They ended up not doing that and going with an elevated subway system. So I'll let you guys purchase the book and find out why they did that. I've got this character, the Mole, who's just basically an information broker. And
he was awesome to draw. I loved
drawing
him.
He was my one mutant that I wanted to get in there, because it is underground. You got to have mutants underground. You always do. So he was my one mutant, but he's like he's the one that really knows what's going on in Stark City, both above and below ground. So he's the one to talk to down there. So there's this whole, like I mentioned, there's a whole black market where you can pretty much find any good service that you might possibly need for your super villainy. You know, there's a whole section where it's basically a neighborhood, just like the other neighborhoods where super villains live out in the open, and they're all underground, but, you know, it's basically an old street from Stark City that they had covered over. It's called Easy Street.
Yeah.
And basically they live out, they have their own neighborhood, so there's, you know, complete with you know, donuts and any other kind of service you could possibly want in your neighborhood, laundry. And of course they've got plans you know, that reach out up above into the city above. So
it would be really easy to play a group of reformed or ex-villains, you know, who live down there for your player character group.
Yeah. There's a lot of options for one hero that's in the book, the Monsignor, who's basically found his way in there, and he's helping people get out of there, because, you know, it's like a growing community down there, and there are people down there that, you know, it's not the nicest place to be, and there might be a few hearts of gold down there that, you know, and the Monsignor is a priest. He's trying to rescue some of these people. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to, you know, to interact with it as a PC as well. It's not just like a hiding place for villains. You can certainly interact and explore down there. And, you know, there's a lot of possibilities because there's a lot of territory down there. Yeah. And I hope people enjoy it.
Or for some reason your PCs have to go undercover, which is always a fun thing.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, do like a Thunderbolts, you know, make them all pretend. Yeah.
Oh yes, and the character that I came up with for down there was Johnny Clank.
Oh, let's mention Johnny Clank. He's kind of a fun character.
Yeah. He's just he was essentially a robot guard who hung around with gangsters long enough that he developed his own personality, and his own personality is essentially he's a robot who thinks he's a gangster.
And he was built back in the 1930s and 40s.
Yes.
Stark City was kind of a...
He's very much an homage to, like, the Tin Man and, like, clockwork kind of robots rather than fancy robots.
Yeah, and he acts like a character from Guys and Dolls, but with a Tommy gun.
A Tommy gun.
And wrote up a little section about him based on... You did some art where the Sentinel was fighting, like, four of them. in a car.
Yeah, where he crashed. Well, yeah, basically the homage to Action Comics 1.
Yeah. So we had a bit where you know, he wants to create his own mob, so he gathers spare parts and this and that from dumpsters, and you know, every once in a while he built enough of himself to try and make a move, you know, muscle on someone else's action, take over the city. So, which is a fun plot hook.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I really liked integrating that character into, you know, the whole mafia scene that we had created down there. You know, we've got stuff going on with, we've got a big mafia boss up in Geartown in Mike's segment. And, there's still that competition between mob bosses. And whenever there's, you know, competition between two different rival mob factions, there's always people that get caught in the middle. And that's where the heroes can come in. You know, so, and then one last thing I wanted to mention about Stark's, about the catacombs is I tried to sprinkle a little bit of the supernatural kind of stuff down there too. Just kind of touching on it, maybe a little Doctor Strange, a little Morbius, a little vampire action. Nothing overpowering, but the possibility for it is down there. And there was one throwaway line I had about one of the groups that lives down in the sewers. It's the Reptile Club, which is it was just a throwaway line, but it's something I hope to develop out a little more and get some folks some villains for that at some point down the line. You know, sort of an homage to all the reptile and snake oriented supervillain groups we've seen from like Marvel and everything like that. So. But, yeah, so there's a little bit of everything. There's little plot hooks here and there you can grab onto and play with.
Yeah, I really like the, you had that that zombie master mafia boss there in the catacombs we call the Dawn of the Dead.
Ah, the Dawn of the Dead, yeah. Yeah, that's a little bit of the supernatural there. We've got, it's a character called Gravedigger. He's the grandson of a former mafia boss that was wiped out by the current mafia boss, Dominic Marinelli, who's controlling the catacombs down there. And it was based on an idea that one of our backers gave us. He gave us like a whole list of these great ideas. And I'm trying to remember his name right now, and I'm really feeling bad about that. I should have wrote that down. Sorry for my notes for the show. But one of our backers came up with this great idea for sort of an enemy for the Monsignor down in the sewers and stuff like that. So I kind of took that idea, built it out a little more, and created this Gravedigger character based on some of the story and history we had with the mafia history in Stark City. So yeah, that was a lot of fun. But I definitely want to give a shout out to, and I will look his name up while
I think
somebody
it's
else.
Wise.
Who was it?
Tom Wise, I think.
That's right. Yes, yes, it was. I believe. Yes, yes.
And which character was that?
Gravedigger.
Yeah, this is the same guy who came up with one of Dan's favorite characters, I think, which was the Tangler.
So
I'm sorry I forgot your name, Tom. And
yeah, Tom.
Thank you for all the great ideas. I really like that Gravedigger thing, so I kind of took that and ran with it. So thank you for that.
I'm totally stealing the Dawn of the Dead, by the way. I already have in my own superhero universe. I already have a hermetic magician mob boss named the Golden Dawn. So I'm going to have the Golden Dawn and the Dawn of the Dead are the
Dawn
both,
of the Dead.
Are the perfect ideal enemies for each other. So I'm going to steal that.
Yeah, I was really pleased with myself for about a week when I came up with that. Everyone else was like, "Yeah, I get it. Yeah."
I was kind of surprised it never come up before, like in a direct-to-video movie. It seems like it'd be, you know, a natural.
Yeah, you would think that. Watch, we're going to get sued next week.
You know,
cease and desist.
Honestly, the level we're at, any kind of lawsuit is just more good publicity.
And that is so true.
So, I have a question. I remember writing up some rules for determining where a PC would start out, as far as who their enemy would be and all of that stuff. Did that get added in there or no?
The thing is, we wound up having so many different villain groups. in order to make those tables work, we would have had to like
make 30 or 40.
It wouldn't be a simple D6. So what we did was we had Jason write a really great chapter about how to incorporate your PC into Stark City.
Yeah. So what I did was I went through everybody else's chapters, and I pulled out plot hooks. So like, for example, Joe, you were just talking about the mob boss down there. What's Dominelli? Was that his name?
Dominic Marinelli.
So what I did was I made up a bunch of these plot hooks, and the idea is that you can, as a GM, you can give players a point of determination if they agree to one of these rules being true. So, for example, you're Dominic Morelli's long-lost brother, like little brother or something. And this is important because Dominic has these two magic rings that he got from his mother or grandmother? I forget exactly what
from his grandmother. Yeah, he has these two magic rings. They're basically in icons. There'd be the they're probability control rings. One for good luck and one for bad luck.
So this plot hook, one of those rings belongs to you, rightfully, but Dominic has it and he's not giving it to you, right? He loves you because you're his brother, but he also, you know, resents you because you want to take his power. So this is sort of classic mob boss, kind of godfather in tights. Sort of plot, and I got to play with a lot of those, and that was a lot of fun. So the GM can just sort of pass these out, or he can say, okay, who wants to be the star reporter's boyfriend, right? And so on. A lot of these use villain hooks from the various villain teams. Others are kind of trying to get significant NPCs into your circle.
That's definitely a much easier way than randomly rolling them. I just thought randomly rolling was kind of in keeping with that.
It's pretty easy to randomly roll.
Oh, yeah. And the random roll was a great thing. It's just with so many villain groups.
Yeah, no doubt. Again, like I said, I wanted to plant a little victory garden. It ended up being a national park, so that's okay. It's okay Jason wrote something awesome based on tables that I came up with. That's fine.
It wound up being like 10,000 words, too.
Exactly.
That section really adds to this book because there are many little hooks you can grab onto for your character to bring them right into Stark City. In all the different sections of the book where we detail the different neighborhoods, they're just brilliantly created so that you can kind of grab on. And then right out of the gate, if you're the GM and you give your players access to these, they can feel like they're part of the setting. I mean, it's really a great add-on for the rather than us just telling you what's there. You know,
it was a lot of fun to see everybody else link in to everybody else's neighborhoods. Like, you know, we wrote them to be modular, but at the same time, we all really started to gush over what everybody else was writing. So we started to create hooks and connections between the neighborhoods, which I think will really reward a group that has time to play in it. One of the criticisms people sometimes make about Icons is that it's sometimes a little bit too much of a pickup game, that it's designed for the one-shot. But now we've created enough of a setting that, you know, you have whole campaigns worth of material here.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
that was another thing. Like, if you wanted to make a campaign, Mike and I were talking, it's like, what would be best for the concept of Icons is having randomly rolled players jumping into a setting that's always, like, a concrete place, you know, rather than having everything rolled up from scratch from the beginning, where the core of Icons came from, like, Fudge and Fate and things like that, where Fate does a new setting every time you create a new series of games. Yeah. I thought that having, like, an MMO-style persistent world for whatever character you want to bring into it would be a better option for GMs, you know. And plus, you get kind of, you know, that sense of this location belongs to me now because it's there. You know, it's not like, oh, well, now we, who owns that bar? I have to write all these notes down. No, you have that. You have who owns the bar, what the bar logo is, who the local teams are.
Yeah. Now, if you want to do some like work, you sure can. We've got, Steve Kenson wrote a set of rules for us for how you can create your own setting, and you can, of course, kind of lean those to be more Stark City if you want, or, you know, you can make Stark City, you know, set it
and that, yeah, and that was another. Yeah, and that was another goal of ours, was to make each section of Stark City something you could pull out of Stark City and plop into your own city.
Yeah, that's right. The idea was to be, you know, half setting, half toolkit, because let's face it, there's a bunch of great settings out there, right?
Oh, there are, yeah, and easily adaptable to Icons. But
Steve's rules are very fractal. I mean, you can use them to describe an entire city, or you can do a neighborhood, or you can do a city block, or you can do a city building. So you can zoom in or zoom out as much as you want.
Yeah, that's what really impresses me with them at first. I mean, the default in the text is the city, obviously, because this is a city toolkit. But it's so easy just from reading it and the additional information he gives you there. I mean, you could do this from the city diner all the way up to an entire galactic universe, galactic empire. You know,
which we're getting ready to do
rules.
We're getting a Stark City Cosmic book, and we're going to get a better title for it, I promise you. But Jason's written a Stark City Cosmic, which is going to be a present to the backers for being so patient with our many delays.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Come to the backers for free. Everyone has to pay cash. And, you know, we're proofing it, reading it right now, hopefully in layout in the next couple of months. Jason's used those same rules to come up with, in some case, interstellar empires, planets, space stations. So it's the rules are very versatile.
Yeah.
Yep. But,
and it's got connections to Stark, too. It has, because I think it was a throwaway line in the Silver District. We mentioned Entropos, the shepherd of the Null State, who was sort of my galactic.
Oh yeah, I remember that picture now.
And his herald, who was based on an actual individual, the last crown princess of Hawaii, who back in the Stark City 1800s got made into the first herald of Entropos. So that was just a casual line meant to talk about how crazy. Batshit crazy things happen in Stark City, but I got to make them all into full blown characters with plots and stuff in the cosmic book.
Awesome.
Oh, hey guys! Now we one of the great things about recording live, and of course, I guess you always record live, don't you? Anyway, I gotta go take care of my dog in the backyard really fast. So Dan, I'm gonna pass the Golden Vamp podcast mic to you briefly, and you can fill in for the next 5 minutes while I go do stuff in back with the Corgi. So take it away, Dan.
Okay. I want to thank everyone for their hard work. That was amazing. This project came out looking just outstanding. And John's work on the cover, he took what I literally made as, like Mike had said, I want a combat picture, a large-scale combat picture with one of the old-school heroes fighting a bunch of villains. And so I was like, well, what would be cool? Oh, I know. A bunch of alternate universe Nikola Tesla if you were evil. So, and then John took that, and that became a whole thing in the book, and I thought it was really cool.
I remember Mike saying, well, what should we call them? And we had, like, all kinds of crazy names for them. We had the Tesla Grammaton and the Tesla Council, and finally we settled on, I think, the Teslocracy.
Yes.
Which is like the Council of Infinite Reeds, except with Nikola Tesla.
Yes, and my original concept was that the leader of that group was defeated ultimately and sent to a reality where all of his accomplishments would be for naught, and that's our reality is where he was sent.
Yeah, of course it's ours. Yeah, yeah. That's great. That's great.
I think what's on the horizon. I know that question's come up from people asking me and Mike and all of that. I think we were talking about adventures set in Stark City, possibly. Again, short little pieces so that people can add on to it what they want and take away from it. So we're still working on format for that. But again, I extend to everyone who wrote for Stark City an invitation. If they'd like to make modules, come see us because I would work on the art, but primarily we'd get possibly a layout person. Adrian, does that sound like something you would like to do? By the way, oh my god, the book looks amazing! Did we not mention that yet, how amazing this book looks?
Yeah.
People, when you get your hard copies, it's going to be fantastic. This book looks outstanding. Page design, page layout, easy to read, indexed properly. Oh, and at the end, you get the Fainting Goat Cakes comics, which are great.
I haven't even seen those. We have Fainting Goat.
At the very end, we've got it's a nice collection.
A whole bunch of them.
They're all collected.
So Mike got some drawn up for the Stark City as well for each individual neighborhoods, and then they got all bunched together at the back as well. So
yep, I think my favorite one features. I think it's the one with the monarch.
Talking about the Venture Brothers.
No, the Fainting Goat Cake comics at the back of the book.
Oh, yeah. What are you talking about?
Just the one featuring I believe his name is Monarch, correct? The
He's one of the bad guys that Jason played in the Silver District.
I like that one as well. the Entangler one is also great. With the cowl.
Tango's cool. Tango cow. Yeah.
Yeah, when he just said, this is what I want the character to be like, I'm like, oh, man. So, I don't know if anyone's noticed, but I designed him to look like a Sleestak. I don't know why I thought that he would make a robot that looked like a Sleestak, but he did. He made a mask for himself that looked all creepy and weird. Because nothing freaked me out when I was a kid more than the Sleestak did.
The Sleestaks were frightening, but they couldn't shoot for shit.
Yeah.
Adrian, how... was the layout for this, like, really labor-intensive? Was it a lot of work?
It's the most work I've done on anything. Yes, this is the biggest project I've undertook in layouts. So, it was... Once you got... because we released a text version, first of all, then a text with art version, then the book itself. By the time I got to the book, I kind of knew what it was going to look like, but there were still a few things that needed moving around, but... It was interesting.
Yeah.
But the worst thing, this is the worst thing. The worst thing I had to do was, there's probably an easier way of doing it, was to number each individual page.
Oh yeah.
I spent a day doing that. So yeah, that was quite fun. the table of contents as well, and then also making the PDF. Bookmarked as well. That was quite a chore as well, but I'm glad I did it because I think the bookmarking is excellent. You should
it's awesome.
Each section and the subsection as well. Yes, everything that's on the table of contents you should be able to find straight away.
Yeah, the book, like I said, the book is just laid out beautifully. It looks great, and since I do all the hero packs for ad infinitum for icons, I do them all in Photoshop. I lay out pages in Photoshop to manipulate text on a more like straightforward level, but I create templates for the pages. So each page isn't page one, it's page X, and then I put the number on. But dude, I do it in such a bass ackwards way that like no one would want to lay out a book the way that I do it, but it's easier for me to fiddle around with it in Photoshop and to create just a native Photoshop PDF and then manipulate it with Adobe once it's finished. But yeah, the book looks just fantastic.
Well, thanks. And since I'm back, have you guys covered Geartown yet?
No.
I think you're up next.
Sweet. Well, as Dan said, it kind of grew out of I consulted on the Gangbusters adventure along with Chris McGrady and Dan. Like, boy, that's been like 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
And the idea was to kind of create this Hell's Kitchen, sort of environment, with lots of plot hooks and. Because that's kind of where things get interesting, is, sort of like a Gotham City, Hell's Kitchen kind of neighborhood where you've got various factions vying and, the humanity, the people who are kind of oppressed by the economy of the place. And kind of, there's a lot of inherent drama there. And when I was actually writing this, I was watching the Wire. Like every day I was watching it in the gym. So I kind of tried to sneak in sort of that, real world, grimy vermiculitude. Wow, I sound like a pretentious fuck. I'm sorry.
Very impressive.
I remember I was talking to John Dunn about, I asked him to consult him a little bit, and, there are some things we brought in that John had mentioned, like, having the port. Because people are always snugging things into New York or Metropolis or Gotham, and if you're doing an investigative adventure, well, you probably want to know where the docks are, because that's, have some NPCs you can interact there, because that's going to be a vital part of the adventure, is talking to those folks and figuring out what's going on. So that was one thing we had. Wow, this is kind of a trip back, because we've been working on this since, last year.
Yeah, concept-wise, it's been... I remember approaching most of the guys who were on the book at some point going, hey, would you be willing to write something for us? And they go, yep. Or Mike, or during podcasts, we're like, yeah, we'd like to talk to you after the podcast. And we stacked up all these people, and then we're like, okay, so what's the project? I was like, it's super simple. It's going to be this. And then it ended up not being super simple.
See, that's the Tom Sawyer aspect of it.
Yeah. It's going to be super simple and fun. And it was fun, I thought.
It was fun.
It's even more fun now that it's done.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I did get a lot of really good pieces out of this as well for my portfolio, I got to say. Like the picture on page 18 of, what's his name? The Master of the Fair fighting
You really love this character. You did like all kinds of art master of the
fans. Do we get nothing? We get stats for him ever or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I know. I just love that.
Like, that's an enigma.
Yeah, I was like, man, that's such a great idea for a character, like such a cool pulp character. And I was like, what would be a neat thing for him to be? I know, he sets the Ferris wheel on fire and leaps off of it because he's crazy.
Now this was a creation of Steve Perrin. The more I think about it, we really should have had him on here. But like I said, I think Steve's got a day job and can be hard to wrangle for daytime podcasts. And due to the edict of my wife, I'm kind of restricted to daytime podcasts these days. Not that I'm pussy whipped. Didn't say that. But yeah. Anyway, that was supposed to be funnier inside my head, and it came out sounding a little bitter. Sorry about that. We will just move on.
Edict is what happened.
She doesn't listen to these, I hope.
I love you, sweetie. Anyway, so what was going on here was this was something Steve Perrin came up with. Because Chicago had a famous World Fair, I want to say 1896, and that was where the first Ferris wheel was, and so many touchstones for Americana came out of there. Boy, that's a lot of the products you're familiar with today, shredded wheat, zippers, Pabst Blue Ribbon is Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Serial killers.
One of the first modern serial killers was operating at the World's Exposition in Chicago in 1896. And since Chicago was Dark City, Perrin introduced this character called the Master of the Fair.
Master of the Fair.
And Dan really glommed onto it, so we got a bunch of art in our history section about the Master of the Fair, which is cool stuff. And I think that's one of our, we've got some adventure hooks maybe in Jason's section talking about, maybe the Master of the Fair resurfaces because his death was kind of left with a question mark.
I don't think it's in my section.
Okay, it might have been, it was somewhere else. We left open the possibility that maybe he comes back in some way.
Probably in the Tesla Park or something.
Yeah, that would make sense. So that was kind of a cool thing. Okay, so we covered Gear Town, Master of the Fair. We talked about Tesla. No, we haven't. Well, the guy who wrote Tesla Park isn't here, but we should probably. Dan, you want to field the Tesla Park question?
We kind of went over that a little bit, just the multiple Teslas and things like that. And
we mentioned that kind of came out of some art you did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, how you said you wanted a big picture with the old school hero fighting a bunch of different villains. So I created one with a bunch of different Teslas from different alternate universes.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising how much of the book came about because if Dan drew some art and was like, oh fuck, we gotta write something to go along with.
that in there.
Who did the cover was
John Gibbons.
John Gibbons.
Yeah.
It's amazing, the cover.
Mike wrote to me.
Very
he
nice
said,
on the invasion picture side as well.
Yeah, Mike wrote to me and said, "Here's the cover. There are these buildings on the cover. Can you put them in downtown somewhere?" And I was like, "Well, sure, if you don't mind me, adding another 5,000 words." So that's where we got the Siren Building,
the Siren being the sleazy tabloid for Stark City.
No, I think that's the Scout Building. The Scout Building is the sleazy tabloid because it's got the observatory telescope on top, which is where one of our master criminals, the astronomer, the astrologer, hangs out. And that's also what created the Stark Central Station, which John drew on the cover. And I think he also drew Monarch. He drew Monarch Industries on the cover. And I was like, okay, well, so what's Monarch? So I had to invent all that stuff. So that's basically where like almost all of my book came from, was the cover.
Well, that's kind of how, I'm going to sound pretentious twit again, but back in the day when Stan and Jack were collaborating, a lot of times Jack would draw first and say, here you go, Stan, write some words on it. It was pretty pictures.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool way to collaborate.
Well, speaking as totally as a writer, it's a lot easier when the artist is invested in the project. I mean, no artist wants to feel like they're an art monkey. They don't want to feel like they're being told what to draw. And I can certainly identify with that. I can sympathize with that. So when they get to be a lot of the creative process, and then the writer can just sort of take that and kind of run with it, it's much more fun for everybody involved, frankly.
But that's how they used to do the old pulp magazines and science fiction pulps back, in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. Sometimes the writer would be given the cover art, Now write a story about this.
Oh, nice.
That's cool. There was a Deep Space Nine episode that paid homage to that once. One of those.
Stars, I think.
But I think especially with something that's so visual, like comic book, graphic novel type thing, and even a superhero role playing game. I like the dual direction of things. I like that stuff's coming from the writers, stuff's coming from the artists. I think it works, and I think looking at Stark City, you know, I think it makes a better product. I really do. You know, when you're getting the influence from both directions.
Well, speaking as a writer, I think a lot of people out there that buy these books also can probably recognize this. A lot of us have like preferred modes and tones and genres that we tend to stick to. Mm-hmm. But another person, like an artist or a collaborator or another writer, can come in and really kick you out of that and help you be a lot more creative by kicking you out of your usual rut. You know, when I was getting some of the character concepts from Steve, for example, or if I would get Dan's art or whatever, and it would send me off in directions that I never would have written if I had been writing in my own little bubble. And that I think is really good. I think it helps keep the work fresh and creative, and it helps keep us from being a little bit too predictable and stale.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, going back on the whole process while we were doing this over the last year and almost a year and a half, I mean, some of the comments, you know, the discussions we had as artists and writers going back and forth really helped me to look at things differently. I remember Jason pointing out that we were kind of getting into a rut where every character was, you know, we felt that maybe they're becoming the same, or we're too in with some of the stereotypes. We got to try to break that, you know. And I kind of took that message, and I'm still a work in progress on it. But you know, writing stuff that, you know, that is out of the comfort zone, and
you know,
and exploring new characters.
This is a real challenge, and I think this challenge is especially big with Icons, because Icons thrives on the homage and riffing on well-known Marvel DC stereotypes. I mean, that's part of why we play it. It's because you can say, oh, well, this guy is the Superman dude, and this is the Flash guy, and over here is our Batman, and so on.
Yeah.
And so it's very tempting for us to just kind of riff on all of our favorite comics, which is wonderful, self-indulgent, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I wonder sometimes if it can be the best that we can do. And so it's a really tough line. We got to kind of go, and a lot of us know this, you know, we've got to sort of pull in a little bit of Astro City kind of Kurt Busiek vibe, mm-hmm. where we riff on our favorite books, and yet there's always something new, some new twist.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Go ahead, Dan.
No, I was just going to say Astro City was one of the major, like, when we were when Mike and I first started talking about it, we were like, Astro City is definitely one of the places that I want this place to be like, where it's like, oh yeah, there is, oh, but it's completely itself rather than,
that's right,
you know, just so another Gotham or just another Metropolis or.
So we can have, you know, we can have like a Superman guy, but he's not just Superman. He's different in some sort of especially unusual or interesting way that allows to tell stories that you could never tell with Superman, you know.
Right.
So, this is a real challenge to Icons, because people that buy Icons, they want those archetypes. That's why they're playing Icons. So we have to give them that, and yet also make it so cool that they don't mind that we've tweaked the archetype a little bit.
Yeah. And yeah, when it also, because your characters are really going to thrive when they have a place and people to interact with that are opposite of them. So especially if you choose to be iconic, wonderful, you know, archetypal superheroes, when you're thrust into Stark City, you're like, wow, there's even more of that whole frisson between the two elements, so that you have a lot of determination getting generated in terms of qualities and challenges and
there's no shortage of gray areas and moral ambiguities in Stark City.
Right.
Well, it's you can have whatever. I mean, we kind of downplayed the modular aspect of the city now. Originally, we're going to release it in chapters. And if you want Grim and Gritty, here's Gear Town. If you want Silver Age, here's the Silver District. If you want, you know, Tony Stark, Iron Man kind of high tech adventures, here's Chesla Park. And the feedback from the Kickstarter backers was, wow, we just don't care. Give us the whole city as one. But, you know, there's a lot of room for having whatever kind of flavor you have in there. That's by design. It's, and hey, different subject. If I can go back to, I was just remembering where that plot hook came up for the Master of the Fair.
Oh, sure.
One of the big events in the Stark City backstory is there was a huge assault on the Stark City police force, killed like a third of the, you know...
That's right.
A third of the boys in blue, and that's one reason the mayor is so eager to have vigilantes come to his city is because, you know, they've lost a ton of their cops. And one of the possible... we don't say who did it. It's all left up to the GM, you know, to fit your campaign. One of the possible culprits is a reincarnation or a revival of the Master of the Fair, because Stark City's getting ready to have another big global exposition. It's just, we call it Starkfest, a massive fair commemorating the 185th anniversary of the renaming of, previously it was called Maskatown, when it was a kind of a pioneer town, to Stark City. And, that's a mini-campaign slash plot hook playing off that character. And, so I'm just OCD, and I remembered what the form that reminded me of, so I wanted to bring that up.
Those big festivals are a great way to launch a new campaign, because it's very easy to get everybody's player characters into the area of the expo, and then big bad guy attacks, and everybody puts on their costumes and fights it off. So it's a great way to say, okay, now you all know each other. You know, it's the superhero version of you all meet in a tavern.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
which actually I have used now. honestly, yeah, that concept of a prologue. The next couple things I'm doing for Ad Infinitum for Icons, I've actually written a 4-part module story thing for players to become like the lead characters in the story.
Yeah.
And they all begin with this prologue, so that you can play each of the modules by themselves as a one shot. But they all make one story, but each of them start with a prologue where all of the heroes get to either meet up for the first time and face these particular villains, or they get to continuously go interact with these villains in these different situations. You're like, oh, okay. But it all forms a story if you play them in order. So it's been a real challenge writing those. But, it's been a lot of fun.
Since you're talking about stuff that you're doing in the future, should we let everyone else give it a chance to do this too? What?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Joe and Adrian, what are you guys doing?
Right now I'm working on a project with our cover artist, John Gibbons, our Stark City cover artist. By mid-October, we're going to be launching a Kickstarter for an Iron Age setting called Extreme Earth. And there will be an Icons edition, but we've got people on board. We've got Aid and Steve Perrin. Adrian Smith, who's on the podcast with us now, and Steve Perrin are doing a Mutants and Masterminds conversion of it. I've got Walt Robillard, who did Stark City's Platinum Coast. He's going to be doing for his company Supers game, the Supers role playing game. Yeah. We've got Ben Norman doing Bash. We've got Stacey Montgomery with a Fate Accelerated edition. We've also got Brendan Blackmore, who's going to be doing one for Bulletproof Blues. Yeah. And I feel I'm missing something. I always feel I'm missing something when I go through this list.
We've got Supers, Fates, Masterminds, Icons.
Do you have a Hero Champions conversion?
We don't have a Heroes Champions conversion lined up. There's no Villains and Vigilantes. We are doing... I know there's one more, but I'm blanking.
This is John. I know John has been working on this setting for a long time. It's kind of his baby, and it's a really, really interesting setting. I tried to persuade him to write it himself. He actually asked me to help him a couple of years back, and I said, dude, you don't need me. You should just write this yourself. Did he get you to help him?
I'm helping him write it. I'm adding some new stuff to it. It's basically true to what John's original vision was for. He's got this great setting.
Yeah.
And he wanted to do. He was telling most of the story through art. He's also putting little comic books together. There's going to be actual comics of some of the major playable characters that we're going to give you. But I'm doing the writing and adding some new stuff as we go along.
Right on.
But it's basically John's John's vision. You know, it's his creation. I bounce stuff off of him, and we're kind of working in tandem while he's doing the artwork and pieces. This is going to be a very art. John Gibbons is an artist, so this is going to be a very art intensive book. There's going to be also the emphasis is going to be on like each. a lot of the artwork's going to be usable and have a function that you can use use it in the game as like as a player's handout.
Yeah.
And he's creating some really great maps and readouts and things you can use as props in a game.
Hey guys, I got to break in for a second. I've got something else I have to do. I'm going to pass the microphone over to Dan if that's cool.
Actually, guys, I do have to kind of split. We're getting down the wire. I've got rehearsals this evening.
We should wrap up.
Okay. Anything else you want to chime in before we call it a podcast?
I'll hint at something not necessarily major, but pretty big on Joe and I's plate coming up. If you guys are fans of Golden Age heroes in the Icons universe, you might notice that we have a couple things out there already for the Golden Age, and you might have noticed that Great Power changes a couple things in Icons, and, well, we're going to have to modify that sometime in the future. But Extreme Earth, keep an eye out for that. It looks amazing. All the art John's been showing off has been just phenomenal.
And Dan and I will be coming back with the new Great Power versions for Golden Age thrilling action for your Icons
games.
Yes,
indeed.
Yes.
Okay, guys, well, I have to go run. Everybody, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate your time. Aid, Jason, Joe, Dan, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
All good.
You bet.
All right, guys, and we'll catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.